Good afternoon, Honorable Deputy Minister. Good afternoon to officials from the department.
Recording stopped. Recording in progress.
Good afternoon to the EDG and other officials from the department and department entities, the parliamentary staff, Advocate Panumeve, staff of the committee, staff from the communication unit, our stakeholders, media. Good afternoon. We're going to now start with the meeting, the Select Committee on Trade, Economic Development, Tourism, Small Business, Employment and Labor. The name is still the same, even though we still don't have economic development. The Risk Committee decided as such, so they have not yet revisited the name. Deputy Minister from the DTI, you may be surprised why we still call it economic development. Waiting for the Rules Committee to change the name. Yeah. Can we ask the Committee Secretary to indicate those who are present and also if there are any apologies?
Yes, Chief Justice. In terms of members, thanks for my camera. In terms of members, we've got yourself, Honorable Moimang, Honorable Mamarhana, Honorable Lons, Honorable Boshoff, Honorable Brasses, and Honorable Apleni. We still have one apology from Honorable Mashori. And then I can see that there are still a few colleagues from the legislature also present, but I'm not sure which members are present here.
Okay. Now we welcome their presence. We would like to have as many as possible, in fact, all of them if possible. But I also know that some legislatures have also plenary sessions. I'm sure some of them have now joined their plenary sessions. That was the reason why I was taking the members through the process that will be embarking upon. So wanted them to be familiar with the process, and there will be times where they will have to wait for us, even if they are done with the public hearings, before they deal with the negotiating manager indicated earlier. They can just wait for us to finish our processes so that they take them into account. Honorable members, we had indicated earlier that we will now be having a formal briefing from the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition, led by Honorable Deputy Minister Machola. I will allow him to make opening remarks, but I just want to indicate that the two bills that we are going to be receiving presentation on were bills that have been transmitted from the National Assembly to the NCOP. They've been passed by the NA and therefore has now been transmitted to the National Council of Provinces. At the time, the NA and also the NA portfolio committees were dealing with the two bills. They were only confined on the areas that the president had reservations on, only those areas. But in our case, because one of the areas that the president had reservations on was the taking of the two bills. They were tagged as Section 75 bills. he had reservations about that, because he indicated that some areas in the law deals with the issues of culture and also issues of trade, and that provinces have a say on those in terms of Schedule 4 of the Constitution. So the debate in the Portfolio Committee, I think also in the NEO, was that it was agreed that it should be then retained as Section 76. Because of that, it means therefore now provinces should also be part of the process of lawmaking. That's why we decided to invite them also to be part of the workshop. Other than that, if it was passed still with Section 77, even ourselves as a committee would have just dealt with those areas that the president had reservation on, but also and maybe then deal with the amendments that have been made by the portfolio committee and the in considering the areas that the president had reservation on the remitted bills. Now, because they are now retired as Section 76, it means therefore we will be dealing with the entire bills, not just the areas of reservation, but also provinces will also be doing the same. They will be dealing with the two entire bills. Yeah, so that's going to be the process. Let me then take this opportunity to request the Honorable Deputy Minister to make opening remarks, and then after that you can then indicate who's going to present, but also if we can also get to know the delegation from the side of the department and its entities. Over to you, Honorable DM.
Thank you very much. I was muted. I'm sorry. Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Khai. Good afternoon to you, and good afternoon to members of the Select Committee, members of the provincial legislatures, and the officials from the DTIC and the advocate for the Merve and the other members of the support staff of Parliament. Let me also greet the members of the public who may be joining on the virtual platform. Honorable Chair, thanks very much for your introductory remarks. Today we're making a presentation to you on the two remitted bills. As you have correctly said, these bills were sent back to Parliament by the President after pointing out his concerns with regard to certain provisions of the bills. So they've been long in the parliamentary process, during the May process. We had long discussions, including whether or not we should advertise only the concerns that the President had raised, or we should go beyond the concerns that the President raised. So that there has been a long process that Dr. Masoja will go through in a minute. There are quite extensive amendments, Honorable Chair and members of the Select Committee, and many of them are technical changes, so it may take a while just to go through them to indicate how they arose and what changes the Portfolio Committee has effected, working together with the Parliamentary Legal Services. The I'm going to ask Dr. Masocha to make the presentation, and she'll also indicate who are the colleagues from the DTIC who are present in the committee meeting. So we will ask for your indulgence, Honorable Chair. I do know that the last time we had having a discussion on these amendments, they were quite extensive and they could take quite a while. So at the end, we'll take questions. And from what you have now said, Chairperson, it's clear that we'll still take long in the process of finalizing these two bills, given how they've been tabled. But we're hoping that we'll get to the point where they can be passed by the NCOP, and that they can be sent back to the President of the Republic for the further debate. So with that, Honorable Chair, thanks very much once again for the time, and if your permission, I'd like to hand over to Dr. Masocha, our Deputy Director General, to lead the presentation.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Over to you, Dr. Masocha.
Good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon, Deputy Minister. Good afternoon to all the honourable members from the provincial legislatures. And also the public, all the members of the public who are in the platform and the media. Welcome to all of you. And as a department, we want to say thank you for this opportunity to present Advocate Van der Merwe, a very instrumental person in these processes, to also acknowledge her and her team, as well as the parliamentary staff. From the DTIC side, it's myself, Dr. Evelyn Masocha, as a DDG for the Consumer and Corporate Regulation Branch. I'm with Dr. Ria Nonyana Mugabani, who's the Chief Director for Drafting, Ms. Mishendri Parayachi, who is the manager responsible for intellectual property in our branch. And also from the CIPC, our entity, we have Mr. Gadi Peje, who's the manager responsible for copyright and IP. And also to recognize the commissioner in absentia, Advocate Arori Vola, who is the head of the commissioner for the CIPC. And we also have with us Ms. Clementine Magaipia, who is the Chief Director responsible for regulatory policy and legislation. And our legal services is here, Advocate Nkamba Ntokozo, as well as Ms. Marisa van Niekerk, who are also part of the legislative processes in the department. And all the other colleagues that we work closely with, Ms. Tulu Falomoshi, Ms. Saroj Naidu, who are parliamentary in their responsibilities. From our side as the DTIC, we are going to present the two bills. So what we have done is to combine them in one presentation. And as the Deputy Minister has indicated, they are quite cumbersome in terms of the size and the scope of the work. They range beyond the reservations that the president has raised, plus the issues that were deliberated in the portfolio committee. So we will take a bit of time. I will try in the presentation to expedite and maybe to ensure that for areas that I'm aware they were covered slightly in the workshop, one will move a bit faster in those areas. So I'm going to now flag the presentation and commence with the presentation.
Just a minute, Doctor. I just want to check if the Office of the State Law Advisor is represented, Ms. Mantia.
Chairperson, I will ask Advocate Van der Merwe to come in with regards to that, because he was, we did extend the invitation to the Office of the State Law Advisor. But Advocate Van der Merwe, if she can maybe just come in with input with regards to that issue.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Because of the lengthy period of time that the bills have taken, the person in the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor that dealt with the bills have retired. So when the bills were referred back by the presidency, they were allocated to two people in the office of the Chief State Law Advisor, but they expressed a concern about getting into the bills at this very late stage. So we've tried from our side to keep them informed, but in any event, the assistance is more to the department itself, and you would have noted the department came with their big team, so they have sort of made up for the loss of that assistance. And then from my side, I try to assist the committee as best I can in respect of the drafting requirements and so on. But so from their side, they indicated it's a bit late for them to get involved in such a complex piece of legislation. And we try and keep them updated, but we do our best to assist the committee without them. Thanks, Chair.
All right. Oh, thank you very much, Advocate. Sorry, Doc, you can continue.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to check from your side, Chair, is the presentation visible?
Yes, it is visible.
Thank you, Chair. So in terms of the outline of the presentation, the areas that will be covered is mainly the background to both bills. We'll start with the Copyright Amendment Bill. We'll also talk to the reservations that were raised by the President, and then go into the specific provisions. And it will be comprehensive in terms of including the entire bill, not just the areas that were highlighted by the President. This will also apply to the Performance Protection Amendment Bill. So the main crux of the matter will be the provisions, but I think also given that long passage of the two bills, it is important to also speak to the processes of what has been done by the department, by Parliament, since they came into inception. And mainly for the process of the presentation, we are here at the DTIC to brief the Select Committee on the two remitted bills. This slide is quite busy. We decided to incorporate it because it serves as a diagram or a picture of what has transpired with these bills over the years and what informed some of the changes or most of the amendments that we have today. And just to highlight, which is something that has been raised, both legislation are quite dated, going back to as early as during the 70s and the 60s, 1967 for the Performance Protection, Copyright Act 1978. So much has happened in the intellectual property landscape since then in terms of the treaties, international treaties, the digital advancement in the world, and the rights that has to be protected and nurtured for right holders from your performers, your authors, copyright owners, and so on. So in terms of where the passage of these bills were coming from, we looked at the timeline as far back as 1998, where various processes were put in place to look at how to ensure that artists are catered for, they do not die without reaping the benefits of their economic rights and the works that they put forward, their creativity. And there were changes that took place in our legislative processes. In 2002, Parliament passed amendments to the Copyright Act, introducing middle time for the music industry in terms of the sound recording sector. And also in 2006, there were regulations that were enacted for the collecting society. And then in 2009, the President then met with the creative industry, and he had a consultation with them to discuss the issues that impacted on them, as well as the strategies that could be put in place to address their plight. In 2010, the department then established a commission that was chaired by the judge, Ian Fallon, who's a former judge, and he was heading that commission with other commissioners. The Copyright Review Commission was very critical for this amendment bill, even for the performers, because it came up with recommendations that were taken into consideration in the amendment process. And also, in the processes, there were studies that the department undertook to ensure that the policies or the policy and the measures introduced in the legislation are evidence-based and there is research that informed them. One of them was a study that looked at the economic impact or the economic indications from the copyright-based industries, which came up with recommendations in terms of the importance of copyright-based industries for the economy. And the department then came up with measures to support the creative industry. One of them was around the issues of formalization, where there were different consultations with industry to look at how to formalize for them to be able to be organized in an economic manner so that they can benefit from the economy. And in 2013, the department published a draft national IP policy. So it's included here because it talks to the passage of policy and progress that the department made in terms of intellectual property rights in the country. And then in 2014, there was a regulatory impact assessment study that was prepared, completed by the department. This study, obviously, we haven't published it in the public, but it is there in terms of the findings and some of the measures that informed the amendments that we have. And both initially the Copyright Amendment Bill was introduced in 2017 and then the performance protection as well. So the parliamentary processes kick-started in 2017. In 2018, they continued and there were subcommittees that were formed in parliament to ensure that the work is properly consolidated. There were drafting issues that were also attended to around that time. Experts were brought on board to assist with the preparations of these bills. And by December of 2018, the National Assembly adopted both bills and the NCOP adopted them in March of 2019. And in 2020, they were then referred to the president. And they were, after that, in 2020, they were referred back to Parliament through the Speaker of National Assembly for them to be brought back to Parliament for further consideration because of the constitutional consideration that the President had reservations about. The next few slides, we thought they should be added in the discussions because they speak to the question of what informed the bills. And as already mentioned from the diagram, the issue of the Copyright Review Commission, the commission that was led to look at issues affecting mainly the music industry, issues of royalties and collecting societies. So it came up with recommendations. Some of them, they informed the bills. So the thinking was that by showcasing this, it's just to also indicate that where some of the amendments are coming from. For instance, part of the recommendations included that South Africa should amend its act by adopting the right to communicate literary and musical works to the public and to make available copies of sound recordings to the public. This is a digital right that is also in the WIPO copyright treaty. I'll speak a bit to the treaties in the next slide. So the digital rights around that work of sound recordings, musical works, was also highlighted in the Copyright Review Commission. Another recommendation made was around the collecting societies. So at the time, we were talking about the registrar when you talk about the commission, the commissioner, and there was a recommendation that there should be an administration of collecting societies and there should be some kind of governance around them. So this was also part of that, the recommendations around that. And also some of the recommendations were not factored in. They were considered in the initial debates in parliament and some of them fell off. For example, the one collecting society per right is one of those examples. However, this is just to demonstrate that the changes were informed. For instance, in the second bullet on the presentation, it talks to the copyright tribunal that would look at other issues over and above the current role that the tribunal plays. Another amendment was around the reversionary rights, which are linked to assignments of rights that the Copyright Act, this must be, to say that this must be modeled according to the U.S. Copyright Act, providing that reversion of assigned rights can be assigned back after 25 years after the copyright came into existence. So this is just to, yeah, so I will maybe leave it from this side just to indicate that there was that review commission that informed some of the changes that are in the legislation currently. I'm not going to talk much on this slide, but just to indicate that there were studies that were done. I think right now, if I count correctly, there are more than 5 different researches that were done. Some of them were done with academic institutions, various experts. Some of them were informed by work done by service providers, like the impact assessment that I spoke to. I know that in the public domain, there are experts who are questioning its credibility. However, there was resources put into that study. It has recommendations, and it's a study that is part of the work that was done by the department. And then the same applies to the copyright, the treaties that informed the bills. And then there's this process that we undertake every time we go into a legislative process with the presidency to deal with the socioeconomic impact assessment. Although it's not a legal requirement, I know that stakeholders have a concern about this one to say that they want access to this and what are the issues around the economic impact assessment. But from our side and in terms of our record, this work was done as part of the package of what informed the bills. So in terms of the processes, in terms of Section 79 of Subsection 1 of the Constitution, the President must either assent to and sign a bill, and if the President has reservations about the constitutionality, refer it back to the National Assembly for reconsideration, which is the reason why we are here. So from the Department side, following that reverse, when the President returned the bill, there was an initial briefing that we did in the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry, and the Minister also contributed. He was part of those deliberations, and the Department also presented the clauses as well as the treaties international treaties implications, just to assist to show where the changes were. And this slide is coming from the Portfolio Committee side. It's just to highlight the work the committee has done and also representing the work that has been done by the Parliamentary Legal Services with the leadership of Advocate Charmaine van der Merwe and the colleagues from Parliament. I'm going to talk to it very quickly. I won't take long around it, but just to showcase the steps the committee undertook to this point and the different processes that they have followed. So on the 1st of June, the National Assembly adopted the committee's report in which the committee outlined how it intended to correct any procedural defects. And then on the 4th of June of 2021, the committee placed adverts in the national and regional newspapers inviting stakeholders and interested parties to submit written submissions with reference to the alignment of the Performance Protection Amendment Bill with the obligations set out in international treaties. At the time, the committee received 91 submissions in this regard. Furthermore, there were public hearings that took place, and then there was a workshop that was held, similar to the workshop that was held currently for the members of Parliament. There was one on the 3rd and 4th of August of 2021 to provide the new members of the Portfolio Committee with a conceptual framework of copyright and related rights. So on the 11th and the 12th of August, the committee held public hearings, and these public hearings included submissions and presentations by stakeholders from various copyright-based industries, and they brought issues and concerns they had about the bill. And following that, on the 11th and the 12th of November, the committee received a response with regard to the oral and written submissions received in relation to the President reservations from the Department and from Parliament Legal Services. Both of us responded, the Department and Parliament responded to those to the submissions and the issues raised by the public. Then on the 19th of November 2021, the committee adopted its report seeking permission from the National Assembly in terms of the Assembly Rule 286 4C for it to amend other provisions of the Copyright Act. And the same applied to the Performance Protection Amendment, both bills. And then on the 1st of December, the National Assembly granted the committee permission to inquire into amending other provisions of the Act. And then on the 4th of December, the committee placed adverts in national and regional newspapers inviting stakeholders and interested parties to submit written submissions on the additional proposed provisions to the Copyright Act. And at the time, the 53 submissions were received in that regard. On the 6th of May, the committee received a response with regard to these written submissions received from the Department and Parliament, Constitutional and Legal Services, respectively. The deliberations were held and they continued from the 11th, 17th, 18th and 25th of May to consider the input and responses from the Department and Parliament. And then on the 8th of June, the committee formally considered the amendments to both bills. So this slide has got some repetition. I will try not to get into them. I think I'll emphasize that there were specific provisions that the president raised reservations about, and they include sections 12A, 12B, 12D on the education, 19C on the libraries, archives and museums, and also on persons with disabilities. There were concerns raised. Some of them were not specific, they were broad, especially on the international treaty implications. And all these culminated into those adverts that were mentioned in terms of the call for public comments. And the further deliberations necessitated that provisions are amended and advertised and put out to the public. So in terms of the final outcome of that process, when there were draft amendments, there were mixed views about the proposed amendments that were made. There were stakeholders who were and are still of the view that amendments went beyond the president's reservations. And in such instances, the response or clarity we provided was that they were not beyond. These were provisions that had treaty-related implications. So where stakeholders indicated a particular treaty can be attended to, there were some of the provisions then considered for further advertising and where permission was sought to put them out in the public. And in terms of the final implications, there were provisions that were debated extensively that had other unintended consequences. So one will try, as I go through the slides, to indicate where changes were made on the bill that was before the bill was published. And so in terms of the final outcome, the National Assembly adopted the bills on the 1st of September and referred them to the NCOP for concurrence. I'm going to speak quickly to some of the objectives of the bill, and I'm hoping that it will also assist in terms of the further deliberations, in terms of some of the core provisions, and hoping that also a bit of background provided in terms of where they are coming from will also add to that, to further deliberations and considerations. So, So in terms of the objectives of the bill, the Copyright Amendment Bill. It is to develop a legal framework on copyright and related rights that will promote accessibility to producers, users, and consumers in a balanced manner. This includes flexibilities and advancements in the digital space that should empower all spheres of the citizens of South Africa. Just briefly, in our context, when we say copyright, we are referring to author's right, which is a legal term used to describe the rights that creators have over their literary and artistic works and other works. And the works that we are referring to can range from books, music, paintings, sculptures, films, computer programs, databases, and so on. Just to give that background, description of what we are referring to, in terms of copyright. And because in copyright we use the word copy significantly, when one refers to copy, it means the reproduction of a work, where work is being reproduced or adopted further. So the bill also aimed to introduce provisions which deal with matters pertaining to collective management. Collecting societies, or in terms of the bill, will only be allowed to collect for their registered members, and all collecting societies have to be accredited with the Companies and Intellectual Property Commission. So this is one of the objectives. So to strengthen the collecting societies regime in terms of how the governance of these collecting societies are managed and how they should operate in terms of membership, corporate governance, reporting, and so on. And also to deal with protection of works and rights of authors in the digital environment. The world has shifted so much. Social media, the digital space is wide. So there is a need for protection of works and rights of authors in the digital environment. And also it provides for standard contractual terms to empower authors when negotiating contracts. This will also close the loophole that has resulted in unfair contractual terms that has led to creators signing away their rights. We also, in the bill, introduce a royalty right called a resale royalty right. So this is a right that is provided for, which means that for original works of art, like your fine paintings, every time they are being resold, reused, the originators then are entitled to royalties. It's a special kind of a royalty. And very critical, the bill also introduces a fair use system for the reproduction of copyright material for limited uses or purposes without obtaining permission and without paying a fee or a royalty. Furthermore, this provision stipulates the factors that need to be considered in determining whether the copyright work is used fairly. This is one area that has been highly debated, highly contentious, and we anticipate that we will be seeing more submissions around it because of the different systems that are in place related to this. The current Act provides for fair dealing. We are not yet in the fair use system. A good example of a fair use, which has been highly debated, is around the US. They have a similar system. And yeah, a lot of debates are anticipated. They were there even throughout the parliamentary process, outside, and we anticipate a similar debate around them on this system going forward. And in terms of the exceptions and limitations, the exceptions also form part of the main issues raised by the president, talking to examples of the exceptions, education, libraries, archives and museums, computer programs, the issues around persons with disabilities, dealing with accessible format copies, and other exceptions like your quotations, translations, and so on. And then most importantly is the issue of royalties. The current Act provides for royalties to a limited extent. This bill extends it further with more clarity on the works, and also addressing issues of assignment and authorization of use of works. And also the other issues is around the recordal of works. So currently there is an issue around, for instance, I'll use an example of the film industry or in the broadcasting when you deal with issues of actors, when their works are being rebroadcasted, and there's no proper system of recording of usage of copyright works. This can apply to music. This can apply to your audiovisual works, including films, the different clips that we see on television. There has been an outcry, especially from our beloved actors and creators, who say that there's no clarity around the usage of their works, and that when their works are being put out there, there's no proper recorder system. So it also affects issues around the payment of royalties. It's more so in the music industry. So hence, this has been one of the areas that the previous committee spend more time on to ensure that this issue is taken seriously, and also introducing serious penalties and offences around this. And then the Copyright Tribunal, as a dispute mechanism, is also introduced in the bill. It currently exists, but it has got limited scope. The current one, the future one that we envisage, is going to look at various disputes and dealing with issues of contracts, royalties, disputes, and different provisions of the Act. And furthermore, the rights of authors in commissioned works, the work that is commissioned, the rights around commissioned works, how commissioned works should be attended to. And furthermore, the introduction of technological protection measures. As the digital space expands, the need for protection also expands, and the technological protection measures are very critical in ensuring a balance between protection and access to copyright works. The next slide focuses on the treaties that informed the bills. I'm not going to go into too much detail, but just to highlight what the slides are covering, because the clauses, some of the clauses were informed by these treaties, and it's important that they are attended to. I think earlier my colleague Mr. Beje was presenting to some extent on some of the treaties. I will repeat some of it. Hopefully it will also strengthen the clarities around how they informed the bills. So the first one to be attended to is the WIPO Performances and Phonograms Treaty. This is administered by the World Intellectual Property Organization. It deals with the rights, for beneficiaries in the digital environment. It deals with performers. So performers means actors, singers, musicians, and also producers of phonograms or producers of sound recordings. So these are persons or legal entities that take the initiative and have the responsibility for the fixation of sounds. Currently, South Africa is not a member. Parliament adopted this treaty, both houses of parliament. They are ready for consideration when they are tabled at the WIPO. So the other processes have been undertaken. We are just waiting for the parliamentary processes to be finalized, but they are ready to be deposited further. The other treaty is the Beijing Treaty on Audiovisual Performances that deals with the intellectual property rights of performers in audiovisual performances. It is administered by WIPO. We are also not a member. It is also another treaty that has been adopted by both houses of parliament, also ready to be tabled or deposited via DECO to WIPO. Then we have the WIPO Copyright Treaty that deals with protection for authors of literary and music artistic works, such as writings and computer programs, original databases, musical works, audiovisual works of fine arts and photographs. We are also not a member of this particular treaty. The other treaty is the Marrakesh Treaty to facilitate for the visually impaired persons. This treaty is very important, and we tried as a department also to ensure that it's aligned with the others for readiness to be ratified. And it is a treaty that we will be on ongoing basis trying to finalize to ensure that it's in alignment. It awaits the legislative processes as per the advice that we have been given around it. And currently, we are not a member of this treaty. And then the processes that we followed for the others, we are going to also do the same for it. And in terms of the Berne Convention, we are a member. It deals with the protection of literary and artistic works. The reservations of the president, I'm going to speak high level on them. I do think that they were talked to in the previous discussions in the workshops. I'll list them and talk to the main issue around them. And that's where the focus in the other house was around them.
Sorry,
Sorry, Dr. Thomas. We didn't deal with the bills. We just generally dealt with the law. So maybe you can maybe be specific on this slide, because we also want or ask the panelists not to deal with the merits or demerits of the two bills.
Thank you, Chair.
Maybe you can also maybe go to town in terms of explaining this particular slide.
Thank you, Chair, for the permission. Much appreciated. I will do so. So the President raised reservations in his letter to the Speaker of National Assembly around the reservations that he had with the two bills. I'm going to speak to them. Some of them are not in the order they were in, but you will see the indication of what they were or what they are. The first one, so the category of them is procedural defects and substantive defects. So the incorrect tagging is one of the areas that we raised. And then Chair spoke to it briefly in terms of why the bills had to be retagged from Section 75 with emphasis only on the national legislation, with less emphasis on provinces because of the constitutional emphasis of some of the bills that have got the implications of provinces. So initially, when they were introduced to Parliament, these two bills were the Section 75 bills. And we were of the view, because it's intellectual property, they don't have too much of a provincial emphasis. However, in terms of the reservation, the President was of the view that the bills are incorrectly tagged, and that in fact they are Section 76 bills because of the cultural matters and trade, that they have implications for trade and also implications for culture, and that in terms of the Constitution, they should be Section 76. On that basis, the bills were then referred to the joint tagging mechanism, and they were retagged, and this also followed deliberations in the committee. So they were then retagged to Section 76 bills, with focusing on not only from a national perspective, but provincial mandates that will also follow in terms of this process. Then there was another issue that was raised around the retrospective and arbitrary deprivations of property. So this speaks to the royalty-related clauses in the bill. There was work that was done by the Portfolio Committee, where the thinking was that many of our creators, artists, musicians, they have challenges, including other authors, not just in terms of music, in films, in literary works, your authors, your writers, they face a challenge that some of them in the past entered into contractual arrangements that were unfair. Some signed away their rights without awareness or without knowledge. Others, because of maybe being desperate, you sign a contract and you're only given so much, but then later on there's more that comes from the work that you had produced. And as an author, you don't get anything further. So there were all these disadvantages that were discussed. And because of that, the committee at the time felt that there was a need to ensure that these royalties have got retrospective application. Retrospective application meaning that if there's still economic value that is being derived from a work, even after the act is passed, you can go further back to get those royalties. That's where the retrospective application issue came from. And this was highly contentious. There was advice issued by the department, there was advice issued by Parliament, that we're of the view that because of the gaps and the uncertainties around how do you determine when this, how far back this can go, and in terms of the specifics of assessing the scope of the royalties, the rights, we were of the view that this may be found to be unconstitutional. But because of the policy rationale, because of the importance of this issue, and the fact that we lost many of our creators, very instrumental people in our society who forms part of our heritage, who are part of our historical context, who contributed so much, and they never benefited from their works, and they were exploited. Parliament felt strongly that this retrospective provisions must be retained. And so the policy rationale was very strong. The current context was very strong. So the president did raise reservations about this to say that this may constitute retrospective and arbitrary deprivation of property, and that copyright owners will be entitled to a lesser share of the fruit of their property than was previously the case. So he raised reservations with those royalty clauses, and that the provisions were seen to be reaching over, they're going beyond the scope of the very same authors it was seeking to protect. And then there was a view that this would deprive the copyright owners of property without sufficient reason, and it will result in substantial arbitrary deprivation of property. So it was recommended that these provisions be removed from the bill, especially in the copyright amendment bill. In the clauses, I will indicate the specific areas where they were removed, but it's in those sections 6A, 7A, and 8A, where there was those retrospective applications of royalty provisions. Going with this retrospective provisions, when the concerns were raised that there could be the constitutionality question, that these are not constitutional, there was a parliament then undertook to ensure that there's due diligence that is conducted around those provisions. So the minister was therefore empowered to conduct an impact assessment and develop regulations that will be tabled in the National Assembly. These provisions were included to ensure that the royalties are dispensed responsibly after further study, and they are not arbitrary. So the questions of how far back will the retrospective royalties go, how will you ensure that there's the fairness in the process, and how will you quantify the scope of what is going to be considered to be what is the correct amount of royalty from, say, 1980 or 1990, for argument's sake. So there were a lot of questions that required more time and research to ensure that there is no further arbitrariness and unfairness in the process. Because of the reservation of the president, it was undertaken that these provisions linked to the retrospective provisions should be removed from the copyright amendment bill, and they were ultimately then removed subsequently from the bill. The other provision was around fair use. The president raised concern with fair use. With the content taken as is from the letter, it was saying that following the public hearings in August 2017, substantial amendments were effected to various sections of the bill, including Section 12A, which has the fair use provision. The relevant provisions as amended were not put out for public comment before the final bill was published. The changes to the section were material to the scheme as a whole, and failure to consult could render the provisions unconstitutional. So there was the view that changes that were in the final bill related to fair use were not properly consulted upon. And there were concerns that the issue of consultation could render them unconstitutional. Hence, the issue was raised again in his reservation for further consideration by the committee. Then in terms of the copyright exception, there were some subsections that the president raised. So the bill does introduce exceptions. It must be highlighted that currently in the fair dealing regime, in the current act, there are exceptions. However, these exceptions are more extensive they are also in line with various global processes and development over time from 1978 to now. So he was of the view that the sections, the subsections and sections that he highlighted may encounter constitutional challenges, and they were cited as listed there, like 12A, 12B1AI, 12B1C. The A1 is on quotations. There's one for ephemeral rights on the sound recordings and the broadcasters. 12B1E on current events, translations, and then on the education rights for libraries, archives, and museums. And he was of the view that these specific subsections may constitute deprivation of property, and that for section 12A that has got fair use and 12B on education, they may further violate the right to freedom of trade, occupation, and profession, which is a constitutional right. So other rights that were cited by the president include other copyright exceptions listed in his reservations, and some of them. So on the issue of the trade and the possible conflict with the rights of the authors and the copyright owners. And in terms of the international treaty implications, as the last reservation, he raised the fact that there might be reservations about whether these bills comply with the international treaties. In terms of the letter, there were no specific issues here. There were no specific issues that he raised related to the reservations in terms of the treaties, but he referred them back for Parliament to look at them, to consider them against the international obligations of South Africa. So these are the main areas that were listed on his letter to Parliament. And in the next slide, one is going to look at the bills. In this case, the Copyright Amendment Bill, in terms of specific clauses, what the clauses provide for, and where changes were made in the National Assembly. I will try to highlight them to say this is where slight changes were made. But because of the issue of the unintended consequences that was highlighted in my previous slides, there were substantive issues raised, but then because of the various expert advices we received, some of them were not taken forward because they require further work, they require more assessment of their implications. So you'll notice that some of the changes that one speaks to are very technical. It will be a word here and there, but not too substantive. It will be considerations that were taken all after all the considerations. So I'm going to start with the clause one, which is about the definitions. So the definitions that are in the Copyright Amendment Bill, some of them I will list them. I will not go into their details, but I will highlight the ones that were affected by the processes of the presidential reservations. So the definitions include your accessible format copy. This is a copy made in terms of accessibility for persons with disability. There's a definition in the bill. And also there's a definition of art market professional, who can be an art dealership, an institution dealing with art, like your museum and so on, but it's mainly the art dealers and so on. Authorized entities, these are the institutions, organizations that will be authorized as prescribed to provide accessible format copies for persons with disability. These are definitions that have got authorized entities in the Marrakesh Treaty. It also aligns to the accessible format copy definition. And then the definition of broadcast, it was included in the Copyright Amendment Bill to align it with the Performance Protection Amendment Bill. Definition of collecting society, definition of commercial, the Companies Act is defined, the copyright management information, open license, often work, often work is a work where an author or the owner cannot be cannot be found, or if they can be found, they cannot be located, which then makes the work it requires a process of how to manage that work. And then the definition of performer, then the person with a disability, and then technologically protected work and technological protection measure. And then the technological protection measure, circumvention, device, or service. The word service was added as informed by the deliberation and then the tribunal. So the changes that were affected in terms of the definition, in terms of the accessible format copy definition, the word including two was added. This was not part of the advertised clauses, but it was highlighted for further consideration to make sure that it aligns to the Marrakesh Treaty. And then the definition of authorized entity is a new definition. It was not in the published bill. And then the definition of broadcast was added to the Copyright Amendment Bill. There was a debate around the use of the word wire or wireless. In conclusion, wire is also included as it was published and finalized in the previous bill in the performance protection. And then the technological protection measure definition to include product. Product was added, and the technological protection measure circumvention device, in terms of the definition of that device, the word service was added. Both the definition of broadcast and both technological protection measures were deliberated extensively. There were issues around processes with the broadcast definition globally, with the treaties that is being debated, and the work that is being done in the government currently around broadcasting. And for the technological protection measures, although there were experts of the view that there should be changes introduced to tighten this definition, there were also stronger views that where in countries these issues have been applied, for example, in the US and other countries, there are indications of other implications from competition implications, consumer protection implications, so that and the view that bringing them in now may have unintended consequences for the country, and it may also not bring the benefits that the changes were going to be proposed for. So, and for instance, affecting the balance between the usage of copyright exceptions versus the rights of the authors and the owners. So that issue remained a contentious one of debate. So that's why the changes seem a bit more technical, where product added or service, without too much substantive considerations given the work that was done. So in terms of the next provision, which is clause two, it's in section 2A, it talks to the scope of copyright protection. This only clarifies what does not constitute protection in terms of copyright. For instance, the clause provides that copyright protection subsists in expressions and not in ideas, and not in procedures, in methods of operation or mathematical concepts. And for example, in cases of computer programs, interface specifications like your manuals, they don't constitute copyright protection. And also, there's no protection to an expression of official text of legislation or speeches of a political nature, except maybe where the author is given exclusive rights to produce them, and then they can qualify. But overall, these are some of the actions or activities that or usages that do not constitute what is copyright. Clause 3 proposes an amendment to Section 5. It focuses on the state or organization that have copyright. These organizations and the state government, where they control or copyright is made under their direction. For example, the right, say for instance, the DTIC has incentive programs. That work belongs to the department. So as an example, so it's about the work that is controlled and owned by a particular organization or government, and it's copyright. Then for the next clause is clause 4. This one talks to communication to the public of a literary or musical work and making available to the public and distribution of an original or a copy of a work. These are digital rights. This is where the WIPO Copyright Treaty comes in. So this amendment proposes an amendment to Section 6 of the Act by providing for communication to the public of a musical work by wire or wireless means, including internet access, and making available to the public a work in such a way that members of the public may access such a work from a place and at a time chosen by them, whether interactively or non-interactively. So it's about access to the works by digital forms. Then the share of royalty is clause 5 of the bill, which proposes an insertion of a new section 6A, specifically providing for royalty sharing after assignment of copyright in a literary or musical work, or where the author of a literary or musical work authorized another to do any of the acts contemplated in section 6, the share of royalties to be determined by written agreement in a prescribed manner. So in this case, the royalty provision is strengthened to ensure that when an author authorizes the use of the work or they assign, they are also entitled to a royalty. And that in that provision, there's also the role of the tribunal. There's also the issue of the agreement and what the agreement should be able to cover for that work. So this provision will be similar to the one for the visual artistic works and also for the films, for the audiovisual works. They are similar in nature. They cater for what could be authorized and also the assignment aspect, but then it strengthens the way royalties are catered for in the Copyright Act. And then the next provision is a distribution of an artistic work, including communication to the public and making available to the public. So this is similar to the one I've already indicated for musical or literary works. So clause 6 of the bill proposes an amendment to section 7 by providing for the distribution of an artistic work to the public, communication to the public of an artistic work by wire or wireless means, including internet access and make. So it's similar to the previous one, but dealing with the visual artistic works. Then in terms of the royalty sharing, is the same principle of royalty that is shared by the copyright owner and the author, and also looking at the assignment aspect and the authorizing of the use of the work and the royalties that are assigned to certain exclusive rights related to that work. And the retail royalty right, I've mentioned it on the objectives. This is a new royalty right. Whenever the work is reused, original work royalty, retail royalty right, it kicks in. So clause 7, it inserts section 7B that provides that the author of visual artistic work in which copyright subsists or his or her heir must be paid royalties on the commercial resale within the art market of that work. Royalties in respect of visual artistic work shall be payable at the rate that is prescribed by the Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition after he consults with the responsible Minister for Arts and Culture. So the royalty rate is set by the arrangement consultation between the two ministers. And we also say that the seller and the art market professional are jointly and severally liable to pay the royalties to the author. It also provides in section 7C to E for authors of visual artistic work to enjoy the inalienable resale royalty right on the commercial resale of his or her original work of art and subsequent to the first assignment by the author of such work of art. This includes the rights in terms of resale. The provision also includes the resale, the duration, assignment or waiver of the resale royalty right. This right will only apply after the commencement of the Copyright Amendment Act once it comes into pass. And furthermore, clause 8 of the bill proposes an amendment to section 8 of the Act by providing for the distribution of an audiovisual work to the public, authorizing commercial rental of the work to the public, communication to the public of an audiovisual work by wire or wireless means, including internet access. This is similar to 6A and 7A, the digital rights. So this is similar to those digital rights that I've mentioned. But in this particular case, when it comes to the audiovisual works, and in terms of the royalty sharing between performers and copyright owners of audiovisual works, Clause 9 of the bill inserts a new section, 8A, specifically providing for royalty sharing between performers and the copyright owner of audiovisual works for any of the acts contemplated in Section 8. The share of royalties to be determined by a written agreement in a prescribed manner. And because of the issue that I raised about the usage of the works, where a particular, say, a particular soapy will be repeated and the actors and actresses are in that process, but they don't, the recording is not made. So the bill empowers that there is a recorder of the usage every time the use of the work of the performer is being used, and it has got penalties and offenses for failure to do so. And then moving forward to Clause 10 of the bill, it proposes the amendment to Section 9 of the Act providing for the distribution of a sound recording to the public, authorizing commercial rental of the work to the public, communication to the public of such sound recording by wire or wireless means, similar to the other digital rights. And one of the key amendments around the sound recording is the equal sharing of royalties between the owner of the copyright, the collecting society, or indigenous community subject to the agreement, meaning that the royalty must be equally shared. And this is an arrangement at the time we understood made with the industry around this equal sharing of royalty, especially for the music industry and the sound recordings. Now I'm going to speak to the part of the deliberations in the committee in the National Assembly around the retrospective royalties. I've already spoken to their rationale, the policy consideration around them, and also looking at the powers of the minister to issue out the regulations and the impact assessment study. All these provisions were deleted in the bill. Following the deliberations around them, so they are no longer applicable. They have been removed from the bill. So two of the issues that the president raised has been addressed. They were removed on the retrospective arbitrary deprivation, and also the powers of the minister. So they have been deleted. And then in terms of clause 11. Of the bill. This clause, it proposes the substitution of Section 9A of the Act. It requires the recording and reporting of any act contemplated. So this is similar to the recording of the example I provided around the performance of actors and actresses and the usage of their works. But this, in this case, it applies to music industry, the sound recordings where the work is being used in certain manners made available in the public. There should be recorder of the usage. And then there's also penalties and there's offenses around this. The offense provides that a person convicted of an offense shall be liable for a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 5 years, or both such fine and imprisonment. And also there is consideration for non-natural persons. The annual turnover of a convicted person that is not a natural person at the time assessed is the total income of that person during the financial year during which the offense or the majority of the offenses applies. So the issue of recording of usage is very critical. It's linked to issues of royalty payments, where there has been more consideration to ensuring that there's protection for the authors, for performers, and in this case for authors, and ensuring that usage is taken into consideration and there's no exploitation for usage of works. And then there was a discussion around the gender neutral drafting in terms of certain provisions where there was his or her mentioned in the entire act, both the performance protection and copyright, they were replaced by other words. They were changed to them, their, or theirs, for example. So gender neutral amendments were considered. They did not form part of what the public raised, but they were raised in the committee by the member who was concerned about that, and then the committee took that into consideration. So in terms of examples of areas where such were taken into account, is clause 11, which I was speaking to around royalties regarding sound recordings in computer programs, clause 21, there's an area where his or her was changed. So for example, the changes will be along those lines. They're not exhaustive, but just examples of where such gender neutral drafting examples are located in the bill. And then the next clause is clause 12. It's about the digital rights. And these were, they form part of the deliberations in the committee in terms of proposals made to align with the treaty, the WIPO copyright treaty. There were proposals to have digital rights for published editions and for computer programs. So to have making the work available by wire or wireless means and communicating the work to the public by wire or wireless means for both public editions and computer programs. So these changes were incorporated, so they now form part of the amendment bill to strengthen the bill and also to ensure that there's alignment to the international treaty, in this particular instance, the WIPO copyright treaty. The next clause is clause 15. This clause addresses the issue of fair use and related exceptions. So it provides for the general exception from copyright protection for all works, providing for fair use, which is a model of use of work or the performance, and it includes factors of usage to consider to ensure the usage of work is fair, for example, the substantiality of the work, the purpose of the work, and also there are examples of usages of fair use. So it has a list of possible usages from research and so on. So this is the general provision. The change that was made there was in subsection 12AC in respect of the name of the author for both A and B, which looks at the different aspect of the general exception. It provides that the name of the author should be mentioned if it appears on the work. And the word "and" was changed to read as well as. And also, if it appears on the work, was added on the subsection. So as I've indicated, some of the changes are very technical. So these are very slight changes after the deliberations and the public discussions around fair use as one of the reservations that were raised by the president. And in the slide and the next ones, I'll speak to some of the technical changes that were introduced based on the deliberations. With the exceptions, there's been a general concern that with the way the bill is drafted, the exceptions are too wide. They give too much scope and rights to users and not so much protection for authors and copyright owners. So there's always been a debate in terms of how wide do you make the exceptions or how restrictive do you make the exceptions. And in that case, part of the processes of the deliberations and the amendments were to ensure there's more control, there's more defined standards of usage to also assist in terms of further issues that may arise in terms of disputes in terms of measurement of usage. So clause 15 also looks at section 12B, which the president in his letter highlighted. So in terms of section 12B, it's about specific exceptions from copyright protection applicable to all works. And in this particular instance, one will zoom into the issue of quotations and illustrations. So section 12B1A, the following amendments were made on the quotations. So the name of the author is to be mentioned if it appears on the work. So this is a change that was made. There was a word practicable in respect of Roman figure 2. And so that was removed, and also consideration was made to include extent justified by the purpose and fair practice. So in this part, in the quotations, both fair practice and extent justified by the purpose will be incorporated in this in this section. And then the issue around as far as practicable will not be considered, was not considered in this provision. And not to be, yeah, and so in this particular point, it was not considered. And then consideration was also made in 12B1B in terms of the illustrations, to say that illustrations are more applicable for teaching and education, so they should move to the exception that deals with education. So this was moved to the next section. And then there was also there's an amendment in 12B1 subsection B in respect of the name of the author, to add if it appears on the work. The intention is to recognize the author and to ensure that when the name appears on the work, it is acknowledged. Then moving along to section 12B1, subsection D. This initially, it was initially 12B1E, the numbering had to adjust. It focuses on the current events exception. It was recommended that as far as practicable be excluded from the bill. It was removed, and that the name of the author to be included if it appears on the work be included in the subsection. And the committee initially agreed to remove section 12(1)(ei), which was in the on the list of the issues raised by the president. This was deleted because it also covered in section 12A in terms of current events reporting. And then the extent justified by the purpose is the only measurement of standard used in terms of this exception. And then there was a correction in the introduction where for purposes of providing current information was corrected. And also the issue of the expense justified by the purpose is retained in this current events exception. Then we'll go to the translation exception. So in the translation, there was a wording that was tweaked. The wording was changed to read non-commercial purposes. Initially, it was not for commercial purposes. And furthermore, based on the deliberations, there was language and culture added to the translation provision. And fair practice in terms of the fairness of the use of the work was retained for translation. There was a slight technical amendment in terms of the use of and instead of or, because or is like optional in terms of the areas listed on the translation provision. So and was incorporated to ensure that all of those listed are inclusive. They are all required. And then in terms of the personal copies exception, it was based on the deliberations and the advice from the public. Fair practice is included in the bill. And then there was a consideration not to include extent justified by the purpose. And then the word individual was substituted with natural person. And then the suggestion to have different time or different device was not considered in the subsection, but it's retained in subsection 12A, where there is fair use. Then 12C provides for the permission to make transient or incidental copies of a work, including reformatting an integral and essential part of the technical process. There was a wording layout issue there that needed to be corrected. The provision was retained with a slight amendment of removing the word independent economic significance to read as commercial significance. Then the education exception, which provides for educational and academic activities. The changes that ultimately were finalized were not substantive, but it was around the measurement of usage and controls. So Section 12D8A, it includes as far as practicable, because this subsection is not an exception that is contained in the Act, but a new one. So as far as is practicable, is currently included there. And also what was added is that the name can be mentioned where it appears and where it is possible. For 12D, both fair practice and extent justified by purpose were included in terms of subsection 12.8b. And also for subsection 12D9, both fair practice and extent justified by the purpose are included. And the deletion was made of where it talks to the name, if it appears in the work on, and only on was retained. So it used to read as if it appears on or in the work. So on was retained, in was removed. So you can see the technicalities around it, but these are not really substantive changes. And then in terms of the next provision that was already in the bill, it's called the Freedom of Panorama. It's general exceptions from protection of artistic works. So clause 15 of the bill proposed an amendment to section 15 of the Act to provide for general exceptions from protection of artistic works and incidental use exceptions. Excuse me. So in this case, for instance, certain acts currently can be seen as infringement. For instance, if you take a statue, say in Parliament, you take a statue with your picture and then you post it on Facebook, for example. So this exception provides for usages that are incidental of such nature without them being an infringement of usage. The next provision is clause 21 of the bill that proposes an amendment to section 19B of the Act by providing that the person having a right to use a copy of a computer program shall be entitled, without the authorization of the copyright owner, to observe, study, or test the functioning of the program in order to determine the ideas and principles which underline any element of the program, if he or she does so while performing any of the acts of loading, displaying, running, transmitting, or storing the program, which he, so because of the gender neutral, they do be them, or it's been amended. So, but then the point being about how computer programs are addressed from an exception perspective and how they are used and considerations around them. So in terms of 19C, which is clause 22, there were discussions around this as well. 19C provides general exceptions regarding protection of copyright work for libraries, archives, museums, and galleries. So deliberations were around section 19C4, where there were issues raised around the usage of this, and it was part of the reservations by the president. There were concerns raised with the use of the word commercial when reading section 19C1 with 19C subsection 4. So this sections, they outline activities that can be permitted for access, educational or research purposes. Based on the deliberations, the section was retained as is with commercial purposes. So commercial purposes, the wording was retained there in terms of the uses as provided for in that particular subsection. And I'm going to move now to the clause 22 on the persons with disabilities. This provides general exceptions regarding protection of copyright work for persons with disabilities. So several amendments were made to align the provisions to the Marrakesh Treaty where we talk about the authorized entities, their cross-border requirements in terms of exporting, importing the works or accessible format copies. So changes were made in this section that are to some extent substantive, but they ensured alignment to the Marrakesh Treaty. So the authorized entity was added. So section 19D1B is aligned to the treaty language regarding the integrity of the work, that the integrity of the work must be maintained. There are sections where the authorized entity is added in subsection 2 and 3. And also there were concerns about the burden of proof and in terms of the usage of the, where there are issues around the way that the works are being used and in terms of the burden of liability around that. So the wording was amended there to look at reason to know, just to ensure the alignment with the treaty language. And the issue of the name was also considered. If it appears on the work, there was, as far as practicable, before it was removed. And there were references to a person using the word that, and they were amended to whom. So these are some of the changes that were, that came about from the deliberations. Clause 23 of the CAB provides for an author to have the right to claim authorship of the work and to object to any distortion, mutilation, or other modification of the work where such action is or will be prejudicial to the honor or reputation of the author. The clause further provides that the author shall be deemed to have the right to take legal action related to the infringement of the provision of this section on moral rights. So this section deals with the way that author has the right to be represented in the work without any distortion or manipulation and not in line with the way they would prefer that their work be recognized. So it's about the moral right of the work and the author. The next clause is clause 24 of the bill. It proposes an amendment to section 21 of the Act to provide for the ownership of any copyright subsisting in the work between the person commissioning the work and the author who executes the commission to be governed by a written agreement. There are works that are commissioned. They can include photographs, they can include paintings, audiovisual works. And so this section or this clause provides how the commissioning relationship should be governed. And it addresses the issue of the use of the contract or the written agreement. And also there's additional protection provided through the tribunal on how the work must be used. For instance, when the work is not used by the person who commissioned it for purposes it was commissioned, where the work is used for the other than what it was commissioned for, and when the work is of a personal nature, how it should be treated, and also when considered the license, how to consider the license when the work is not used by the person who commissioned. So there's a big role for the tribunal here in terms of ensuring that factors are taken into consideration on how commissioned work must be considered. And then there's also work around the clause on assignment of literary or musical work. So clause 25 of the bill proposes an amendment to section 22 of the Act by providing that copyright owned by, vesting in, or under the custody of the state may not be assigned. What is owned by a government or the state should not be assigned. Also, it provides a reversion right for where copyright in a literary or musical work was assigned by an author. It will only be valid for a number of years, in this case, 25 years from the date of such an assignment. And that the agreement in that regard can be both verbal or in writing. In terms of licensed works, orphan works, Clause 26 of the bill proposed the insertion into the Act of a new Section 32A, making provision for licenses in respect of orphan works. Is mechanism or procedure on how to deal with orphan works and how orphan works should be applied, and also orphan works for the resale royalty rights for the original works of art. So it just sets out the procedure when you can't find the author, when you can't locate the author, what are the steps in order to use that work and procedure by the regulator, which is CIPC. One of the big amendments in the bill is it's around the collecting societies in terms of accreditation, administration, regulation of the collecting societies. So this is forms part of the recommendation of the Copyright Review Commission, how the whole collecting society regime should be addressed in the bill. So there's a chapter that has been inserted into the Act for the accreditation that includes issues of transformation, administration, regulation, and also it has got strong offenses in terms of things that must not be done intentionally in terms of the collecting society. And also provisions are made for the transitional arrangements for those collecting societies that are not accredited currently, and the procedures that will be followed, how the collecting society must deal with issues of royalties, and the control of the collecting societies by the authors, performers, the copyright owners. So it's just a big amendment that deals with different issues related to collecting societies. And as the honorable members may recall, there was a time there were lots of issues around the governance of collecting societies, the tensions around issues of membership, payments of royalties, and so on. So there is a gap legislatively on the governance of these collecting societies. And furthermore, this clause provides for the suspension, cancellation, accreditation of these collecting societies. So it's a very big amendment. So moving on to clause 28 of the bill that proposed an amendment to section 23 of the Act by providing for an offense if a person tampers with information managing copyright or abuses copyright and technological protection measures. So these are information related to copyright management information linked to technological protection measures. So there are offenses linked to how the information is abused or mismanaged. And clause 29 of the bill proposes an amendment to section 27 of the Act by inserting a new subsection which provides for an offense if a person unlawfully circumvents technological protection measures applied by the author or copyright owner. It also provides for penalties where the convicted person is not a natural person. In terms of clause 29, there's a section that has been inserted, section 27.5A. It provides for offenses in respect of communicating and making available the work to the public by wire or wireless means. There are some changes that have been made in terms of this provision. For example, in the original bill, there was a reference to owner. The reference was removed, so the owner could have authorized another person to give authority. So necessary authority is all that is required. And because of the serious nature of some of the breaches that are not for commercial purposes, it was recommended that in terms of the offenses, both offenses made for commercial and non-commercial purposes be taken into account. This provision relates to exploitation and issues of piracy where copyright works are circulated in social media, on the internet, without infringing the rights of the copyright owners and authors without proper permission and this infringement. So this is one of the measures in the bill that is meant to deter abuse of copyright works by users or any person who might infringe the use of copyright in a manner that was not intended. And one of the considerations is that the person who does so must have known that they're doing so. So in offense is only intent constitute an offense. So when the person knew what they were doing, when they were circulating, or it had implications because of their knowledge, so that's when it can be an offense. So the words "or has reason to believe" were removed from the section, so the person must know. And then there was a numbering issue from the provisions that were advertised. So that has been addressed. And also there's 5B and 5C that were added. Subsection 5B is offenses of infringing copyright with device or services, and 5C is offenses in respect of copyright management information. And in the same context, we say that only intent constitutes an offense, and offenses in general, so meaning that the person must have known, there should have been a knowledge of these offenses, and then there were changes that were required to be made related to the verbs in the provision. And so these are the slight changes that were made in this clauses. And then clause 31 provides for prohibited conduct in respect of technological protection measures. So in section 28O, there was the word "service" added to read as technological protection measure, device or service. And then there was removal of reference to the Electronic Communications and Transaction Act, which was agreed to be removed. So in section 28P, which provides for exceptions in respect of technological protection measures, there was also removal of the ECTA Act, Electronic Communications and Transaction Act, and also the reference to regulations were made under the Act included in the section. So meaning that permitted acts, there's a regulation that they can be prescribed. And on clause 31, furthermore, there was a correction that was made of numbering. It had two subsections with a similar number. And then the Copyright Tribunal, as recommended by the Copyright Review Commission, is one of the major amendments as well. Clause 32 and 33 of the bill amend section 29 and proposes the insertion of section 29A to 29H into the Act, which provides for, amongst others, the strengthening of the Copyright Tribunal, its functions, appointment of its members, term of office, removal and suspensions, and procedural matters on the conduct of the hearings of the tribunal. So it's the whole governance, strengthening of the tribunal, its functions, its hearings, so practical application of how the tribunal will be dealt with. Clause 35 is on the regulations. Clause 35 of the bill proposes an amendment to section 39 of the Act by providing for ministerial powers to prescribe regulations relating, amongst others, to the procedure for the conduct of tribunal hearings and relating to collecting societies, as well as prescribing minimum standards for contracts. And furthermore, there were some corrections that were made, supported or informed also by the public participation process. So there was a correction to CH to read at S28P. It was 28B, and in that regard, 28B did not exist. In terms of section 39, subsection 3, there were consideration for regulations recognizing entities in respect of persons with disability, and then consequential amendment include regulation in subsection 2 in respect of persons with disability. Also, very important for the protection in the bill is the unenforceable contract. So clause 36 of the bill proposes a new section, the 9B, and provides that a term in a contract that purports to prevent or restrict any act which by virtue of the act would not infringe copyright or which purports to renounce a right of protection afforded by the act will not be enforceable. So there are rights that are provided for by the act. So a contract should not deviate from such rights. And also, it should not renounce the rights that have been provided for by the act. So such a contract, if it's found to have been made in not good faith and against the rights of those who are participating in that contract, can be regarded as an unenforceable contract as per the bill. And this was considered as additional protection for unfair contractual terms where contracts are used not in a positive manner, but to disadvantage those who are not as aware or who do not know their rights in terms of contracting. So this is meant to also create an enabling environment for contracting in terms of this piece of legislation. So Clause 37 of the bill proposes the insertion into the Act of a new Schedule 2. The Schedule 2 provides for translation licenses and reproduction licenses. And also Clause 38 provides for the amendment of the expressions. So we used to have cinematograph film and film in the Act. They will be replaced by audiovisual work and work, respectively. And then the transitional provisions are provided for in Clause 39. So this relates to the issues that are linked to the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Act, in terms of ensuring that certain provisions will only become effective once this law comes into effect. And then the last one is Clause 40 of the bill that provides for the short title and commencement of the bill. So this is the last provision in the Copyright Amendment Bill. In conclusion, as far as the Copyright Amendment Bill is concerned, from the observation and participation of the department, we are of the view that the president's reservations were considered in detail. Also, from the experience of what we observed was that many provisions were considered, however, due to their substantive nature and potential unintended consequences, the changes could not be made. Some of them require further research and policy consultations. For example, on the technological protection measures definition, the definition of broadcast, the ephemeral exceptions that deal with issues of the sound recordings and the broadcasting records, issues of royalties around that, that usage or exception, and then the personal use provision that was proposed around the definition of lawfully acquired. There was an experience that was exchange or observation from the UK around a similar definition. So most of them were deliberated, but because of some of the potential implications, they were not incorporated in the amendment bill. What could be said about your extent justified by the purpose, your fair practice measurements, issues around your, as far as practicable, the name of the author, is that more alignments were made on this measurement of control of the usage of exceptions, meaning that the concern of the president that the exceptions, or the concern of the public as well, that some of the exceptions are wide, was taken into serious consideration. There were efforts in terms of ensuring that they are tightened and there's more of such added into the into those exceptions. I'm going to then move to the next presentation, which is on the Performance Protection Amendment Bill. In terms of the Performance Protection Amendment Bill, this is the objectives of the bill as taken from the bill itself. The bill provides for the performers' economic rights. It also extends the moral rights of the performers in audiovisual fixations. This is the rights of their image, not to be distorted or mutilated, but to be represented as it is. To provide for the transfer of rights where a performer consents to fixation of a performance. To provide for the protection of rights of producers of sound recordings. To broaden the restriction on the use of performances, to extend the application of restrictions on the use of performances to audiovisual fixations, to provide for royalties or equitable remuneration to be payable when a performance is sold or rented out, to provide for recordal and reporting of certain acts, and to provide for an offence in relation to thereto, and also to provide for the minister to be able to prescribe compulsory standard of contractual terms, as well as guidelines for performers to be able to grant consent under this act, to provide for prohibited conduct and exceptions in respect to technological protection measures and copyright management information. Some of the provisions in the Copyright Amendment Bill are similar to the Performance Protection Amendment Bill. As the performance protection is a neighboring right to the copyright, and also to the Copyright Amendment Bill. So there's a close link between the two bills. So some of the issues you'll find that I've already highlighted them, but from the copyright perspective, for example, the issue of the technological protection measures. So there is an alignment between the two pieces of legislation, including the definitions and so on. So likewise, to the Copyright Amendment Bill, we have Clause 1 of the definitions. It's audiovisual fixation, the definition of broadcast, communication to the public, what that means, copyright management information, what does performance mean, what does a performer mean, what is a producer reproduction, what is a sound recording, what is a technologically protected work, and technological protection measure and technological protection measure circumvention device. So these definitions, especially around the technological protection measures, are similar to the ones in the copyright amendment bill. And also the deletion of the definition of cinematograph film fixation, phonograph, and by the substitution for the definition of broadcast performer and reproduction. Clause 2 of the bill proposes the substitution of Section 3 of the Principal Act. The primary objective of this clause is to clearly circumscribe the statutory rights conferred upon a performer, in particular certain exclusive rights in respect of his or her performances. So it's about the image of the performer, their moral rights, how their work should be or their performance should be addressed. And then there's clause 3 that deals with the transfer of rights. Clause 3 proposes the insertion of Section 3A to provide for the transfer of rights where the performer has consented to fixation of his or her performance in an audiovisual fixation or sound recording, which is subject to a written agreement which shall give the performer the right to receive royalties or equitable remuneration for any use of the performance. It is proposed that the exercise of the right in respect of sound recording shall be valid for a period of 25 years from the date of commencement of the agreement and whereafter the rights revert to the performer. In terms of the recent deliberations, there was a need to distinguish the remunerations of the performers in relation to audiovisual works and sound recordings. Between the issue of royalties and equitable remunerations. So in terms of the royalties or equitable remuneration, it applies to audiovisual works and then equitable remuneration in respect of sound recordings. And then the issue of the gender-neutral drafting has been factored in different provisions, including this one on the transfer of rights. Clause 3 also focuses on the protection of rights of producers of sound recordings. So it also grants exclusive rights to the producer of a sound recording that includes the right to reproduce and making available to the public. The clause also provides the right to earn an equal remuneration subject to the contract for the direct or indirect use of sound recording to the performer, composer and producer of sound recording published for commercial purposes for broadcasting or communication to the public. So this talks to the rights that the producers of sound recordings have. And then clause 4 of the bill proposes an amendment to Section 5 of the Principal Act to provide for the consent of the performer for an unfixed performance or a performance fixed in an audiovisual fixation or sound recording. It provides for availability of the original and copies of performance fixed in audiovisual fixation to the public. So this provision aims to also ensure that there is proper usage of the performance works, whether it's live or fixed in a format of, let's say, an example would be a recorded CD or a video, and the manner that that work is being addressed. It also talks to the issue of the gender-neutral drafting. Furthermore, in Clause 4, there is also provision for a person who intend to broadcast or communicate the work to the public and how that should be addressed and the recorder of that work. So the work that is being used in the public must be recorded for to ensure that there is that payment of those royalties. So failure to do so constitutes an offence. And also there's issues around penalties and fines on the where this is not followed accordingly, and it also provides for the performer to receive royalties or equitable remuneration for authorizing the fixation of the audiovisual work or sound recording for performing certain acts provided in the agreement with the producer of that fixation. And then in clause 5, there is a proposed amendment to insert Section 8 of the Act and provides for situations where audiovisual fixation or sound recording can be used without consent. For instance, that include private study. So these are exceptions where there could be free use of the works, so of the performance. So this, there is provision for that as well in the Performance Protection Amendment Bill. So the clause provides for the act the broadcaster can perform without consent that is required in this in Section 5, but where the performer has consented. It also provides for gender-neutral drafting. And then Clause 6 of the bill empowers the minister to make regulations regarding compulsory and standard contractual terms, as well as to provide guidelines to performers when granting consent. And then there was a correction of a typographical error where the word into was added. It was missing in the reading of the wording. And clause 7 and 8 of the bill proposes the insertion of sections 8E, F, G, and 8H to provide for the prohibited conduct in relation to technological protection measures, which is aligned with the sections 28OP of the Copyright Act. So these are the sections I indicated are similar in terms of their alignment. And the alignment of the TPM related provisions. So for clause 7, the reference to the Electronic Communications and Transaction Act was made, and also in section 8E and section 8F. And then the gender neutral drafting was also taken into consideration in this provision. And then the clause 9, it substitutes the expressions phonograph to sound recording and fixation to a sound recording wherever they appear in the Act. And then the transitional provisions, clause 10 provides for the transitional provisions. And then there's a short title for the short title of the bill and the commencement. And just to add, in clause 2, there are these exclusive rights that are also added. I'm going back a bit, sorry about that. The exclusive rights, they include the broadcasting and communication to the public of their unfixed performances, the fixation of their unfixed performances in an audiovisual fixation. So basically, there are economic rights that have been provided in the bill, in the Performance Protection Amendment Bill for performers in a more structured manner. to also enable them to exploit their economic rights. So this goes back to clause 2, but just to add that there are these exclusive rights that are relevant for the performers in their performances, whether fixated or unfixed. Chair, this was the last slide. I just added that part. I will stop there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I don't know if the DM wants to make some comments before I allow honourable members to ask questions.
Chairperson, thanks very much. No, Chair, that would constitute the totality of our presentation. I wouldn't want to make any additions at this stage. We promise that it will be a fairly long presentation.
Yes.
Thanks. Otherwise, thanks very much.
Thanks so much, DM and DDG. Honourable members, and to check the list of members who are connected. Are there any questions on the two bills, honourable members? Can you help me, Ms. Marty, if there are any hands?
Yes, Chi. At present, I don't see any hands, Chi.
Oh, okay. So maybe it was clear. Can I just check, DDT, on the issue of those issues that are still going to require further research and consultation? For example, you made mention of that there will be further research and on the definition of broadcasts. But I see in the copyright amendment bill there is a definition already on the bill. So what does that mean when you say then there's going to be, because it's not now deleted in the definition for purposes of further consultation and research, but it's already defined in the bill itself, but it's one of the items that are still going to be subjected to further research and consultation. Honorable Muima.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also express an appreciation from the presentation. Just two areas that I want to be clarified on, Chair. The first one relates to a point that was raised that I think it's in relation to the provision of section 12. Another point that was raised was that there are amendments that were made, if I'm not mistaken, that were made beyond the reservations that were expressed by the president. And the question that I want to be clarified on is can those areas be flexed to us so that we are sensitized around them? And secondly, whether those amendments, were they put to the public consultation, were they subject matter of public consultation, or were they brought as part and parcel of the consultative process? The second point is the issues around, I think it's 1639, if I'm not mistaken, a point was raised around the standard contract that was introduced in the bill. And earlier on, a point was raised around the freedom to contract. If the amendment to the Act does introduce a type of a pro forma contract, what does that do to the point that was raised earlier on around the freedom to contract? But other than that, I think the issue of the trading, I agree, it was quite important, the trading, the Section 76, of course, mindful of the fact that trade is not a concurrent function. But maybe if one could just be clarified in terms of what could have also led to the, other than culture and tradition, which I suspect could be the reason behind, but that the issue of trade, I thought that is not a concurrent function. But other than that, there's also a last point that was made around the socioeconomic impact of the bill. If the team can just share with us the study that was done, so that at least one get a sense around the politics behind the two amendments. Of course, mindful of the point that was raised in the workshop that we had around the systemic nature of the challenges that were faced by the performers, but also the need to ensure that there is a protection of intellectual property rights across all the various players, whether it is the author, whether it is the performer, whether it is the scriptwriter. Yeah. Thank you, Chair. Let me pause there.
Sorry, I was just checking my constitution, especially on safety report, because remember, should have reason about trade, just wanted to check it on the schedule 4, because it's one of the issues that was mentioned as that provinces have a role with regard to this. But I just wanted to, because my understanding and also the advice is that because now the bills have been retagged as Section 76, the possibilities that it means therefore the committee and the provinces are not bound by the reservations of the president, because now they are the entire bill is subject to the legislative process, which includes the committee work, the provinces, the public involvement or public hearings and public submissions. My question therefore is, what then if the public comes back on the same issues and convince the legislatures and also the committee, for example, on the issue of the fair use, that is one of the areas where the president has a reservation on, and the issue of the retrospectivity, what happened with regard to this, because the whole bills entirely will be subject to the law making processes. There will be submissions that committee and legislators must consider, and they could come back as part of the negotiating mandates or even final mandates of the provincial legislatures. Maybe can we get then responses if there are no further questions? For clarity.
Thank you, Chair. I request not to open the video again if that is okay with Chair.
It's okay, though there's no indication of challenges of connectivity. It's white there. I was educated that it's white and the track is fine. When it's yellow, then there's a likelihood, but then when it's red, you can be kicked out. Okay.
Thank you Chair, for the indulgence. Much appreciated. Thank you. In terms of the point, the question that the Chair raised about the broadcast, Chair is correct. Broadcast was in the bill. There was broadcast before. So what has happened? There were comments that were made, especially from, I think the broadcast came back from a treaties perspective, where there was a debate about the use of wire or wireless means. And because of the wire and wireless means, the debate, the issue then became critical for further deliberations on whether to remove wire. So the recommendation was that to align to one of the treaties, wire must be removed and we are left only with wireless. But then the deliberations talk to the implications of what that means in the South African context when you remove wire. So it came about from a treaty implication perspective. But you are right, Chair, there was the definition before. But then there was also a need to ensure that the definition is also incorporated in both bills, copyright and performance protection. So some of the issues raised were related to existing provisions, where there was a need to align to a treaty or to improve a particular provision where there were issues raised. So that's where this came from. But it was already there. But then the issue of wireless is what brought it back to the focus of the discussions. So this ties up also to the question by Mr. Mungmang related to the issues that went beyond the reservations. I raised that point because the members of the public who were of the view that the amendments or the proposed changes went beyond the present reservation, because the president listed particular subsections and provisions in his reservation letter. But then on the implications of the treaties, I'll use an example of the digital rights for the public editions and computer programs. They were not on the list that the president provided. However, they have treaty implications. So from the WIPO copyright treaty, you have digital rights for computer programs and for public edition. So the public said, let's include them and so that we update the legislation and take that into account. So the point I was trying to make was that in our view, there were no issues that went beyond what the president provided. He also said we need to ensure our obligations in terms of international treaties alignment. And he was not specific to say, look at broadcast, wireless. He was not specific. So the public assisted, the experts and the public assisted to identify those areas that needed to be aligned to the treaties. That's where we think that those issues came in. So I raised it because we are going into another public participation process just to highlight where the changes were coming from. So that was where, this is the context of where that was coming from, to say some of the issues came about when we also looked at the international treaty implications. For instance, in the Marrakesh Treaty, there were things that the president did not raise the definition of authorized entity, but because of alignment to the Marrakesh Treaty, the authorized entity is incorporated in the amendment now, and it was also put forward to the public for further consideration. And then the other issue of the standard contractual terms versus the freedom of contract. And I like the honorable member's emphasis on the pro forma, like a guideline or some kind of an indication. The thinking here is not to interfere with contractual rights of copyright owners, authors, and the producers and so on. The reason why this issue came up strongly is because of the historical context we have in South Africa, where unfair contracts were part of the system. And from our understanding, that situation is still happening today. So you have someone who is a new creator, a new artist, or a new musician, or a new actor, actress. They don't know what to expect when it comes to a contract. So whatever they're given, they can even sign their rights away. They don't know what a contract should indicate. How much are you going to be paid? What is the term of the contract? Is there an exit clause in your contract? It's just a standard to say, when you do a contract, there are considerations you should have in mind. So it's not to dictate actual contractual arrangements between persons, but the emphasis is to say, as a policy issue, the issue of contractual arrangements and fair contractual practices came about very strongly, and it's a historical context. I mean, from time to time, you open the Sunday Times, you hear about a very prominent musician, a prominent actor or actress who's saying, I lost so much, I did so much, but then the contract said everything was signed away to so-and-so, and they're making money, I'm not making anything. So it's our challenge that we thought that this issue deserves a specific emphasis, but not to dictate, but to just set out the enabling environment. It's like creating a playing field around issues of contract. What happens between parties is confidential, is between them. Government does not get involved, but the government can set the tone. It can create a framework. So the person must know, I need to know about my rights, the term of my contract, what rights do I have, when do I get a royalty, how is that determined, what is the rate of that. People must know such basic things, and then they can choose when they go out to negotiate what they choose to find themselves agreeing to. So that's where the context is coming from. And the intention is not for this to tamper with the freedom of contracting. And in terms of the trade versus the Schedule 4, trade is one of the areas of concurrency in the Constitution as a Schedule 4 matter, likewise to cultural matter. So it was raised because trade affects all areas, I mean, the provinces, national, and so it's a concurrent area. It was raised in that context by the president also to say there is a need for the retaking, taking into account the issue of trade. So it is one of those areas that has led to this discussion. The socioeconomic impact study that I was referring to is an actual study that we outsourced to a service provider. There's also the socioeconomic that is dealt with by the presidency. So what we will do from our side is to make available the studies one was referring to, especially the core ones for the committee to have access to those. In terms of the Section 76 implications and what happens if the public opens up the debate, and for instance, the issue of fair use, and then it is agreed that there's a need to look at fair dealing again, as is in the Act now, and to reintroduce retrospectivity. I think on that one, I would say that is part of the public participation process. As a department, there are policy positions that have been considered, even outlined by the minister in his presentations, in terms of how we look at fair use, in terms of the rights of consumers, users, and also the rights of the authors and the copyright owners and everyone involved. There's a way that we've come up with the policies around there to say this is where we are on fair uses, where we are on different areas. Of course, others were new issues over time that we needed to also adjust to in terms of where are we, given that the bills evolved in terms of their term in the contract, in the parliament and so on. I would say, Chair, on the new directions, we will also be guided by the honourable members, will be guided by the Chair, in terms of the approach that the the NCOP would like to take on those key policy positions. From our side as a department, we will assess issues as transparently, as independently, as objectively as we can, and where we are still of the view on certain policy positions, they will be put forward as they emerge. But then the final decisions around this will be dependent on the mandate of the provinces, will be dependent on the deliberations by the select committee. So there is openness in terms of the final bills, how they will look at the end of this process. So that is something that is still open based on the deliberations that are going to come, the public participation, the views of the select committee. And yeah, that's how far as I can answer it. It's a very difficult question, I must say, because there is a way the bills are right now. There is a way we look at policy from our side, but yes, still an open process. There could be changes that are considered, there could be things that are reintroduced, and that will also depend on how the committee then looks at the issues. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Dr. Francis. Honourable Moimanga, I did check the treaties part of the functional areas of concurrent national and provincial legislative competence. So yeah, it was also on those bases that it was rejected as Section 76. Let me just check then if there are any other members who'd like to make follow-up questions. If not, can I ask if there are any comments from advocate Fanemeve, also from the procedural point of view, if Shamira would like to also make comments.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wonder if I should comment now. I am going to be speaking a little bit about tagging in my presentation that will follow. And I think some of the points that were raised might come up in my presentation so that I don't duplicate. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Let's start then with Shamara, if she has any points to raise.
Thank you, Chairperson. The only thing that I have to say, Chairperson, is with regards to the submissions that would come from the public, in terms of when the department has indicated that further research and we would need to look into those aspects, it will all depend on whether the legislatures would agree with those amendments, and then only will it come before the committee. So at the moment, whatever comes before the bill as its whole will serve before the committee, and dependent on the proposals made during the public hearings and the negotiating mandates coming from the provinces, will the committee have to decide on those specific issues. Thank you, Chairperson. Nothing further.
Thank you so much. Dr. Masters, I see your hand is up.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to Ms. Ali Shamara for the issue about research. I didn't respond to that question. On the research, further research work that was highlighted or areas that were highlighted having issues, I think the emphasis there on that concluding slide was just to say there were areas that were identified in the deliberations that still requires possible further research. Some of the processes are locked in discussions, maybe say from an international perspective in terms of a treaty around say broadcasting, others depending on other departmental processes in other departments. So not all of them we are saying will do researches on them, but it was just to highlight that they were not dealt with in terms of amending further because of the way gaps identified, whether there's further work needed or there's a need for further engagement or policy debate and so on. That's where the context of research was coming from. So they had different contexts, but they were identified. So it was just to make sure that they are brought forward and they're mentioned somehow in this process. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you so much, Dr. Masters. What we're going to do now is to allow advocate the There was a court case that went to the Constitutional Court. She's going to, at a high level, take us through that. And after that, we will then ask Honorable DM to make closing remarks. But I must also indicate that in the morning during the workshop, because we wanted to accommodate the provincial legislatures in terms of the process, because some of them have now joined their plenary sessions. There's a program that we have developed with regard to the two bills, which we won't be taking everyone through that now, because we did that in the morning, but we will share it with the department. That includes the briefings to the provinces, but that we will share with the department so that they are aware. It goes up until May next year in terms of these two bills. I will be processing them. Let me now hand over to Advocate Fanemebe. Over to you, Advocate.
Thank you, Chairperson. If you would allow me to not do my video, I am going to go into load shedding in the next 5 minutes. I have switched over, so everything should be fine, but it says my internet connection isn't 100% stable. But my presentation isn't long. I want to just discuss with members the issue of, first of all, the Section 79(1) process. Now, it has been discussed to some extent on various occasions by the chair, by DTI, so I won't go too much into it, but maybe just to confirm with members that, and I said I will speak a little bit onto the tagging, so that's why I want to just pause on this one slide, that both these bills were classified as Section 75 bills. Now, it is a bit of a technical argument whether they affect cultural matters, because the bills in themselves are regulating a right. They are regulating the way in which that right can be explored, can be used, is protected, what are exceptions to that right. And because of that, strictly speaking, the bill should be, both bills, should be classified as Section 75, and that is why they were in fact classified initially. However, the court in the Tongwai case said that if Parliament errs on the side of caution and rather makes a bill a Section 76 bill, then the Constitutional Court will not be able to criticize and find that bill unconstitutional, or the process in which the bill was processed unconstitutional. Now, we need to be cautious that we do not just make every bill a Section 76. There is a reason for Section 75 processing of legislation. It is part of the Constitution, and we need to be cautious and not just make everything a Section 76 because we feel a little bit uncertain. But in this specific instance, and because these bills are so contentious, the content of these bills you will see, the members will see when we start with the public participation process, there are so many views on the policies that are entrenched in these bills. And unfortunately, a very good way to attack a policy is to attack the parliamentary process. So because of that, and given this background to these bills, the Portfolio Committee decided that in this instance, they would rather err on the side of caution, and they requested the joint tagging mechanism to make both of these bills a Section 76. Now, normally, a Section 75 bill is not considered by the National Council of Provinces unless it contains a procedural concern that the Assembly cannot correct or that only the Council can correct. An example, for instance, was, I think it was the Performing Animals Protection, where there wasn't a quorum in the NCOP sitting, and therefore it's only the NCOP that could correct that. So that would be an example of something like that. But because these bills, even though they were Section 75 when they were referred back, was then changed to a Section 76 bill, the rules, the joint rules dealing with Section 79(1) indicates that it must then be referred to the council. So in this instance, and I put it there in bold as my last bullet, the council must process the bill in accordance with the principles set out in Section 76. And you can only do that if you consider the totality of the bill as if it is a new bill referred to this council. So the Select Committee must almost see these bills as something that is before them the first time. You cannot be limited to the President's reservations because you now have to process this bill in terms of a new legislative process. So that is perhaps just on that. And then just to explain to the committee what is expected of this committee in respect of the Section 79(1) process. So 79(1) deals with constitutional concerns that the President raises. In this case, it was constitutional on a number of substantive matters as well, and I'll speak to that just now, but also in respect of the legislative process. So what is expected of this Select Committee and Joint Rule 209 is applicable. Now, first of all, you will see there that I wrote in blue that the committee cannot confine itself to the President's reservations because of the change in classification, the change in the legislative process. This committee may confer with the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry if there's any concern that the committee has or some questions that the committee has or just discussions that the committee has. And then lastly, the committee must report on the President's reservations and if the Assembly passed an amended bill on the bill. Now, if the committee agrees with the President's reservations, and in this instance, the joint tagging mechanism sort of took that decision for this committee in that they said there should be a different legislative process. So at this point in time, then the committee is can recommend in a report how to correct that procedural defect. But in this instance, again, because the committee is doing a whole new legislative process, I would recommend that this can be done in its final report. However, your procedural advisors can consider this and then advise if an interim report is necessary. But I really think that it could be in a final report. And then, of course, you must report whether you agree with the amended bill or recommend rejection of the bill. In this case, you may also amend that bill. And here I will be very quick because Trade and Industry really spoke to this quite in detail. So the first concern was respect of tagging. That has been changed. They were both reclassified as Section 76 bills. There was a concern about retrospective clauses and impermissible delegation of legislative power to the minister. These the Portfolio Committee agreed with, and these subsections have been removed from the Copyright Amendment Bill. And then the last three, lack of public participation in respect of fair use, which is now the new regime that is proposed in this bill in respect of exceptions. The fact that certain copyright exceptions may constitute deprivation of property and that others may violate the right to freedom of trade, occupation, and profession, and lastly, compliance with international treaty implications. Now, in respect of treaty implications, this is not something that the President can refer a bill back on. However, because there was public participation, the committee, Portfolio Committee, decided to consider all the reservations of the President. And accordingly, international treaty implications were also considered because that would then ensure, especially because this also affected your exceptions. And because of that, the committee decided to consider all of these. And again, I will not go into the detail of the facilitation of public involvement. There was very extensive facilitation, and there were amendments made. So that is just on the Section 79 process, and then I want to just very high level discuss the matter of Blind SA versus Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition with members. So what we have here is that the concern is that the current Copyright Act, so in other words, not the bill, the Act itself was before the court. And the concern that was raised was that that Act did not provide for people with visual and print disabilities. And it's very important to keep in mind that this case only dealt with visual and print disabilities. The bill deals with a lot more. It deals with all types of disability, and it provides some exception for all persons with any disability, not just visual and print disabilities. And this, of course, is because of the right to equality in our constitution. So although the Marrakesh Treaty speaks to visual and print disability, our constitution requires that the legislature considers equality rights. So if it affects one person with a certain type of disability, we must also provide for others, because if the limitation would affect them the same way. But in this specific case, the court found that if we look at the sections of the Copyright Act that deal with authorization and exceptions to people who have a visual print disability, then these sections are not in compliance with the Constitution. They are unconstitutional, they are invalid, and they are inconsistent with their rights. Specifically, to the extent that these provisions limit the access of these persons to publish literary works and artistic works. So this was suspended for a period of 24 months. If the suspension lapses September 2024, there is, in other words, still sufficient time, because the bill is before the Select Committee in this period. And the Constitutional Court provided for a read-in measure pending the correction of this defect. Now, just to quickly go through the rights that the court indicated were affected. The first one was the right to equality. And perhaps while I go through these rights, members can also just think whether these rights would also be affected in respect of a person with a different type of disability, because that is what we will have to look at when we consider the bill. So the first one that the court spoke to was Section 9(3), which says that the requirement of authorization is unfair discrimination. Just because there is a different format necessary for a work, and now you need to authorize someone to make that different format before you can use it, that is unfair discrimination in respect of someone with a disability. Section 10, which is the section dealing with human dignity, the court found that those with print and visual disabilities are radically compromised in the access that they enjoy because of authorization being required, and that in itself places an indignity because of the difficult circumstances these people already face. Section 16, dealing with freedom of expression. And here the court says that your right to have freedom of expression, in other words, to utter something, also means that you need to be able to receive something. And if you cannot receive it, it impairs your freedom to impart information, and therefore it affects the right to freedom of expression. Section 29, dealing with education. I think this one almost speaks for itself, but the court found that it affects the right to basic education as well as further education. And the court indicated that there can be no doubt that the relaxation of the requirement of authorization is a reasonable measure that the state can and must take. And then lastly, cultural rights. Because literary works are such an important source of cultural life, the court indicated that if you cannot have a format made that is accessible to you because of the disability that you have, then you are compromised in your enjoyment of the right to participate in a cultural activity of your choice. Now, the remedy of the court was to prescribe measures. The court considered a number of measures. The first one was proposed that there could be regulations made. Now, Section 13 speaks to certain regulations that can be made in respect of reproduction of work. But the court said that it doesn't mean that an accessible format copy is an exact reproduction of a work. There might be some adaptation, in other words, some change to the work. Now, this is not in respect of the content, of course, and you will see that the bill itself also says that we must still respect the integrity of the work. But it might be, and in fact, I have a very good example. When we advertised some of the changes that were proposed in the portfolio committee, we tried to have what we advertised transcribed into Braille. Now, I thought I was being very clever, and I had some of the changes made into blue font because I thought it stood out very nicely, very easy for the public to see what the changes are. But of course, you cannot translate blue into Braille. You can't, that blue color of the font cannot go into Braille. So we had to find a different way for those changes to be made clear in Braille. Now, that is an adaptation. It is not, doesn't change the content, but the way in which it was presented had to be changed. So the court said that, in other words, Section 13, which allows for regulations on reproduction, is not sufficient. The second thing that the court considered was Clause 19D of the bill. Now, this is something the committee will consider when we start talking about the bill itself. Now, first off, I started this talking about the judgments by stressing that the court only dealt with visual and print disabilities, and Clause 19D goes broader. Now, unfortunately, a court is limited to the facts before it. So the court cannot just by itself go broader. And because of that, the wording of Clause 19 could not be used. That was the main reason. There was also something else. There's some requirements for regulations in Clause 19D. Now, we will have to consider when we consider Clause 19D, if the way that it's worded now in respect of regulations is sufficient to still address this judgment. But the court wanted a remedy that was available immediately. To say that the minister must go and make regulations would mean that there would still be a delay after the judgment. So that was also something that could not suit the court in respect of Clause 19D. So what the court then did was to provide a read-in provision. Now, I'm giving you the full read-in provision here, but I'm not going to read it out. When we go a little bit more in depth, I will do a comparison for you between the two. What we are proposing is that, first of all, our office is of the view that Clause 19D, in fact, does comply with the court order. There are some differences between the bill and the reading that relate to drafting practice. Some relate to policy proposed by the department. We must keep in mind that the committee does not have to accept the wording proposed by the court. What the court has done is to provide a remedy, and the committee needs to look at that mischief that the court tried to remedy. And as long as the wording of the clause remedies the same mischief, but even if it is a very different remedy, then that will still be in order. We must keep in mind that the court is very cautious to recognize the legislature's right to make legislation, and the court doesn't want to prescribe. But where it is necessary for the court to give immediate relief, it will then sort of step a bit into the arena of the legislature and provide wording. But the court accepts that that wording is not necessarily the final way in which it must be worded. Of course, we must consider it. We must give serious consideration to it, and we will do that. But the committee must just keep in mind that it is not necessary to have it word for word. And I will, in fact, when I go into more depth, I will explain why certain of the words are in fact not suitable, for the bill. For instance, the court used the Marrakesh word of beneficiary. But when we look at the bill, there are many beneficiaries. Marrakesh only dealt with people with visual and print disability as beneficiaries, whereas the bill deals with many people who are beneficiaries in respect of an exception. There's an education exception, there's technology exceptions, etc., etc. So all of those are beneficiaries. So, for instance, for our purposes, the word beneficiary will not work in the bill. And therefore, we use a person with a disability as a phrase. Also, our bill must go broader in that because we need to keep Section 9 of the Constitution of Equality in mind, and we must then provide for other persons with different types of disabilities. So those are the things to keep in mind. However, and this is why I'm saying that we must give serious consideration to what the court has provided that read-in, and our office is in fact taking it very seriously. We've already attended a workshop with Blind SA to hear what their views are on this. And we have made contact with a Dr. Samtani, who is advising Blind SA, and she has given us an undertaking to provide input on the wording of the bill by the end of November 2022. Now, we will be in contact with her before then as well, but at that stage, we will then provide feedback to the committee so that the committee can feel assured that either 19D is in fact sufficient, or if there are concerns, that the committee is appraised exactly what those concerns are, what the possible ways forward is in to address those concerns, and then whether further amendments are required or not. So we will definitely do all of that for the committee. And Chair, thank you. That is my presentation on these two matters.
Thank you very much, Advocate Fanameva. Honourable members, can we make inputs on the first and second inputs? I think the next one was at high level, but we'll be getting details, as we indicated in the workshop, sometime in November. Are there any questions? Just a question from me on the second one, Advocate, that usually when the courts instruct Parliament to remedy any defects, usually that process would then start from the NA and then comes back to the NCOP. So I was just checking, even if, say, Plan SA were to come with the correct wording, which in a way would be to remedy the defect that have been identified by court, even though you say we don't have to agree with the wording of the court, shouldn't all that process that has to do with the instruction from court have to first go to the National Assembly before it comes to the National Council of Provinces? Linked to that, what effect does this court decision have on the current amendment bill that we are dealing with right now? And can you then maybe respond, Advocate?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to put my video on, but I hope, if I break up, please just let me know. Chair, in fact, you are right. This is the first time that I'm aware of where there's already a bill before a House when there's a constitutional court judgment. And there my power just went out, but I think I should still be fine. So this is the first time that we have something like this. The only way that the judgment will affect this bill is if we are recommending amendments. What we will have to do is to see whether those amendments can be derived through negotiating mandates. If we cannot do that, then another option would be to approach the Portfolio Committee. In fact, if we do it as a 76 bill, we can actually do this as a committee bill, even in the NCOP. It doesn't have to be in the NA, depends on whether it's a Section 76(3), if it can be introduced in the NCOP. But then we can approach either the Portfolio Committee or the Select Committee for a committee bill that will simply address those amendments. So there are many options. It is a bit out of the ordinary. It's not something that we normally do. In fact, this way I am consulting with the applicant in the matter is also a bit out of the ordinary. But the reason I'm doing that is because the bill is already before the committee. Normally we leave all that work for the department to do, but now it is before Parliament. So it's Parliament's duty to make sure that the bill reads well. And we will make sure of that from our side. But like I say, the only way that this affects the bills before the committee is if there are amendments, and then there are ways that we will deal with it. If one solution doesn't work, we do have backup solutions, and we will make sure that we make that time that the court has given us. Thank you, Chair.
I was just interested as to what were the argument of the department, because it was the one that was taken to court. How did they lose the case? Dr. Masoja can respond.
Chair, thank you very much, and also to the advocate. For now, Chair, I think I will request, if my colleagues are in the platform still, from Advocate Kamba, if maybe she would like to speak to the legalities around the Blind SA matter, because I know that they did do some work around it with Ms. Marissa van Niekerk. Through you, Chair, if you allow me.
Yes, indeed.
Advocate, I'm not sure if you are in the platform. If you are, can you assist with that issue? Because I know that the team from Legal Services did extensive work around it. Ms. Van Nicker can also speak to it. Marissa, over to you.
Thank you, DBT. Thank you, Chairperson. Just in brief, Chairperson, the instructions, I didn't deal with this matter specifically. However, the instructions that we received from the Ministry's office was to abide by the application, because Minister also was of the opinion that we cannot discriminate against people who's not able to access these materials. So it was not opposed. A notice to abide was filed. I don't know if Advocate Kamba wished to add more, but that is just the gist of it. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you so much.
Afternoon, Chairperson and members. No, I have nothing to add, Chairperson. We abided by the application. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. So it was not approved. Okay, no, thank you very much. I think at this stage, if there are no further comments from members, I will then ask the Honorable Deputy Minister to make closing remarks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And thanks for the time that we have afforded us this afternoon to make the presentation. Just on the Blind SA matter, Chair, you would know that ordinarily we would, from the Minister and the Executive side, would adopt a progressive approach on matters like this. So it would have been order to oppose a case that has got to do first, especially pertaining to people with disabilities. So I'm sure you agree that it was a correct approach to adopt. With regard to all of the issues that we discussed, in the another Mimang asks that the president's reservations be clearer in the presentation. So I know that Dr. Masoja did list them. So we'll do something there to make them more pronounced. And I know, given what both Dr. Masoja, yourself, and Advocate Panameva have now said, so that issue has now moved. So there's been a lot of water under the bridge. But at the beginning, there were strong views that we should just confine ourselves to the reservations by the president. So Dr. Masocha did explain what happened with regard to treaty implications and some of the things that came out of the public participation. But given the retaking, so and what Advocate Fanarweve has now explained, and you did make reference to this in your opening remarks, so the process is now quite open, so the legislature is going to decide how it's going to manage it. I was very interested in hearing the Advocate Fanarweve before we leave. I know what Dr. Masocha's position would have been on the retaking and the implications of the retake. So she went, the advocate went through that. So I think it's a very useful thing to know. And as she says, this looks fairly like an extraordinary situation. So it could take some time. So we're quite anxious that we can go through a process that can ensure, firstly, that we can finalize the process in line with the court judgment, and but that the bills can be returned, can be finalized and returned back to the president. Now, with the participation of the provinces and the consultation process we're going to have, so from the side of the department, we will be guided by what the legislature decides on how to manage that process, and I can only say that we'll be quite ready, especially from a social branch, to come back to you to if there are any requests that are made that we should give more information with regard to helping the process going forward. So we can only hope that with all as they will say that the process is now wide open, so we can only hope that it will be finalized soon during the course of the next year. But with that, Chair, thanks very much. It's always very educative to attend these meetings and to hear where the members of the Parliament are coming from, so that these views can guide the work that we do as the department. So I'm not going to complain at all about the work that the legislature must do, because the legislature must do its work. So there's a lot of criticism we get that we spend a lot of time in processes that are necessary, that are robust, consistent with our own type of democracy, but that robust process leaves with little time to enable us to take actions that impact on ordinary people's lives. So, but we've got to find a proper balance. So we'll wait for the legislature to finalize its process, and we hope that with time the bills can be finalized and they sent back to the president for his assent. Thanks very much for your time, and thanks to all members, and thanks to Dr. Masocha for the presentation, and to the advocate. There are things I didn't quite understand clearly until the advocate made that presentation. It was very useful, especially on those matters of taking and the extraordinary circumstances we are currently in. So I think that was very useful, so it will help us at least also temper expectations with regard to how fast the legislature will be able to move to finalize the bills. Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable TM. I suggest that also if the advocate, even though we will be together with her throughout the process, if she could share that last presentation with us as members, and also members of the legislature, and I think possible also with the department as well. Let me then take this opportunity to again thank the deputy minister. minister, the department, and the CIPC, and also all the officials from the department. Let me thank the honorable members, the members of the committee. I see my internet is unstable. I hope I can be heard. The honorable members from the legislature that have been with us throughout. I understand that some of the members had to join the plenary sessions. We thank very much those who are with us. As I indicated in the morning, that these proceedings are recorded. Members can go back even to last week's first workshop, go through that and also link it with the presentation that we receive on the two bills. It's something that I will be doing myself, you know, because as we all agree, these two bills are very technical in nature. So they need a further understanding in terms of the concepts and also the conceptual framework, and all those things. So that's what I'll be doing, especially that we agree that it's going to take us some time. So I will also use it in the December period to go through those videos on YouTube or get the link from the committee secretaries. That's why I'm encouraging other members also to do the same. My fear is on this briefing to the provinces that the week of the 1st to the 5th, I would humbly request the PLOs to please liaise with their legislatures and also the permanent delegates to ensure that the week of the 1st to the 5th of November, we at least finalize those briefings. Department is made aware so that they can also allocate the officials that will be going to the provinces. I suspect that there will be virtual, so they don't need to travel to the provinces, but they will have to connect to individual provinces, getting the link from the legislature's concern. So my fear is around that, because if we have a delay around that, then it will affect the whole process. As I indicated, we will share that process, legislative process, with the department so that they also prepare themselves. I think other than that, again, I will thank everybody. And let's say, committee secretary, there's something that I'm leaving out.
No, Chi, you covered everything.
Okay.
But Chi, what we will maybe do is we'll just, from the provincial liaison offices, we'll just get the schedule of when every province is going to be having their provincial briefing. And just circulate that.
That will really help, yeah, because that's the area I'm worried about. Yeah. All right. No, thank you very much again, DM, and the officials, honorable members. Thank you very much for attendance. So as from next week, we'll be then starting with the other leg of the process in terms of briefings to our provinces, and then we take it from there. Thank you so much, Advocate, for assisting and clarifying some of the issues, because I also had was of the view that we only deal with those areas that the President had reservations on. But then you clarify to us that the everything now started afresh in terms of these bills. Especially now that they are Section 76 bill. Thank you for clarifying some of those issues, including, we'll go into details, as you say, in November. We still have two other meetings with the department, DTIC Deputy Minister. We'll still interact before the end of the year. Thank you very much, everybody. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you, and bye-bye.
Thank you.
Record.